Welcome back to Moms Unbothered, the show where we ditch the toxins, trust our instincts, embrace a healthy lifestyle, and don't care who it bothers. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Kate.
And this is a really fun episode with Samantha from Acres and Aprons. Samantha and her husband started their own little homestead, and today we're learning about what goes into creating your own homestead. We discuss the difference in sheep versus goat's milk, our unfiltered thoughts on parenting in current times, and how growing up crunchy shaped Samantha's life. Before we get into this, if you love conversations that challenge the status quo and help you level up your health, take 2 seconds to hit that like button. Subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, or leave a quick review if you're a podcast listener. It helps more moms like you find this podcast. And let's be real. The more of us out there, the less we have to explain why we don't let our kids eat McDonald's. Okay. Hi, Samantha. We're so glad you're here. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
All right. Well, let's just get started. Just share who you are, a little bit about you. And yeah, we're here to chat.
Okay. All right. Well, I am Samantha. My husband, Ryan, and I live in Indiana on 23-ish acres with our two boys. And we're kind of newer in the social media world in the realm of homesteaders. A lot of the times when you find homesteaders, they are very established. They've been around a long time. And it's honestly more common that they are 30s, 40s, 50s. So it was kind of, you know, I think took the internet by storm when we showed up very young, building a farm, having a family. Actually, there's a lot of things that we don't share on our social media, like our location, where we live. I'm a little bit sneakier about it. And our age, I never share my age because I feel like people do not take you seriously when they know your age. If you're younger, like when we started, I was 25. I was 25 with two kids and building a whole farm. And I never shared that because in my personal life, I felt like I experienced people not taking me seriously because of my age. So anyway, our most loyal followers, though, they know, like, if they're on my newsletter or follow more closely or like interviews that we do, they get the scoop. But I don't openly share a lot of those things. But anyway, we have been living on our farm about 2 years, and we started sharing on social media about 14 months ago. It was February of 2024. So however long ago that was. But we kind of decided, we had been on our farm for a year. We didn't have any animals yet. And we kind of decided that was the route we were going to go. And I pitched the idea to my husband. I was like, listen, this is kind of crazy, but what if we put everything on the internet? He was like, what? You want to like put this all on the internet? Like, we don't really know what we're doing. I was like, I know, but it would be so cool to share as we go and to, you know, really make something out of it, to build a business and a brand and just as we go. And he was more of a mindset to kind of wait until we were established to share. But I'm more of the, our relationship dynamic is that I'm more of the, I'll jump out of the plane and find my parachute on the way down kind of personality. And he's a little bit more cautious. So anyway, we went for it. He said, go for it. And we started and we blew up out of nowhere. We are Christian. And so I don't know about you guys, but it's hard for us to talk about our story without talking about how, like, our faith and how that played a role in it. And so we really feel like God, you know, led us in that direction. We prayed a lot about it and really kind of just asked for his direction to open or close the door. And we just felt like the door flew wide open. So anyway, that's kind of a little bit of our background, how we got here, how we made it on social media. We are just loving the homestead life. It is so busy and chaotic, but it is so fun and it's hard work, but we're workaholics. We love hard work. So, but yeah, that's kind of a little bit of our background.
I have so many questions. Yeah. My first one is, how long does it take you each day to do like farm chores, feed all your animals, clean up all of the things? Like, how long are you outside doing these things?
That's and a good question. So my husband handles a lot of the farm chores and the animals. I handle almost 100% of social media and the home and the kids and everything else. We also have an Airbnb that we own and manage. So that's like another thing that I, you know, kind of head. So he's pretty much in charge of the animals. I do help out, but he spends probably at least an hour in the mornings and probably close to an hour in the evenings. And then there is still lots of things that I will do during the day. So, you know, that's food and water. We have dairy animals that we milk, collecting eggs, just like the basics, moving the sheep around, changing pastures. If we have to do, you know, trim their hooves or shear the sheep or raising baby animals and moving those around and changing feed and water. And so I'd say, man, a minimum of an hour or two a day, but then that's not including, we live on 23 acres. So the maintenance of, we're building new pastures, mowing the grass, tending the garden, all those types of things. So it's a lot. We live a lot of our life outside. In fact, last year, we did the 1,000 hours outside challenge. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but they have an app where you can track your outside time. And we hit 1,000 hours by like August. And I was okay, well, I'm not going to track the rest of the year because I know we're well exceeding that. So we do live a lot of life outside. As far as help goes, we don't have help on the farm front. I consider myself to have help because my husband only works 4 days a week. So I consider, like, he's off Sunday and Monday. So I consider those my days of help. And then I just hired a house cleaner that comes once a month. That was like my big take something off of my plate. And I will have a babysitter for the boys, maybe one or two mornings a week. But we don't have help aside from that. And we don't have help as far as social media goes, other than the fact that I have a virtual assistant that does a few things. She does like blog writing and Pinterest and a couple of things. So that's the extent of the help we have at the moment.
That's busy, but it's nice to stay busy. It's nice to stay busy. And then, cause like you said, like, oh my gosh, by August, I've already got all these hours outside and it's just, everyone's probably happier and just feeling good year round, honestly, just being outside.
Yes, the boys are definitely happier outside and it is busy. We have struggled to find the balance of just busy enough and not going clinically insane because we're just drowning in work all the time. So it's been a struggle over the last year and a half to find the balance of not overworking because it is a lot. It's very busy.
So you said you have dairy cows, right?
We have dairy sheep. We
do dairy not have sheep. Cows. So are you drinking raw sheep milk?
We are drinking raw sheep milk, which can sometimes make the internet really mad.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Yeah. Okay, I want to know why sheep over like goat or cow, because you post a lot about sheep milk and I'm very curious.
I get this question a lot and I love it. Okay, so I make the goat fanatics really mad when I talk about this because I do not like goats. And people think that that means that I'm saying that goats are bad, that nobody else should like goats. That's not what I'm saying. I just personally, I don't like goats. I grew up with goats. I did not like their personalities. I did not like the way that they smelled. I did not like their meat. I did not like their milk. I didn't like anything. I'm goat traumatized from my childhood. So when we wanted to get dairy animals, like some sort of livestock, we wanted to raise meat and milk. And the options are really like goat, sheep, cows. Cows are just too big. We didn't have the infrastructure. I didn't want to deal with it. My parents live next door and they have way too many cows. If I want raw cow's milk, I just go down the driveway and I get it from my mom. So
that's nice.
We wanted to do something different and I just didn't want goats. So we went sheep. But on top of the fact that I just am not a fan of goats, sheep are very sustainable financially. They have more valuable milk. They have more valuable meat compared to goats. They have wool, which is a whole other aspect of value that goats don't have at all. And their temperament is a lot more easygoing. They don't like test the fences. They don't escape ever. They're a lot more sweet and gentle. And their milk is more enjoyable, in my opinion, higher in nutrients. I just feel like it's no contest. Like sheep win all around.
Wow. I'm sold already. I'm going to get some sheep now.
I have a lot of followers who are like, I just want you to know, I just went out and bought 4 dairy sheep because of you. I'm like, put it on my tombstone, like turned many to sheep instead of goats. Like, I'll take that title.
How did you discover sheep? I mean, like, did you read a book? Did you just Google? Were you just, you woke up, you're like, I'm going to get some sheep.
I've been asked this before and I cannot remember the moment that I was like, I want sheep. I saw something about it on Facebook, like a Facebook group or something popped up. Like my algorithm knew I was like on the edge and it fed me a dairy sheep group and I joined it and I was like, oh, dairy sheep. And I started talking to just some of my family. My brother-in-law in particular was very into the idea. He was like, we could have a sheep dairy. Sheep, it's a very niche market, but it's very valuable when you hit that niche market. Like, sheep dairies are highly sought after for that very niche market. So anyway, I am so like spur of the moment, just
impulsive.
I'm so impulsive. I don't impulse shop like things that often, but I impulse shop animals bad. Like, it's a disease. It's an illness. I just woke up one day and I found this chick who was selling dairy sheep. And I went to my husband. I was like, Ryan, I just bought two sheep. I'm really sorry. I don't know what happened. It just took over. And he was like, we don't have a pasture. And I was like, we'll make one. And he was like, we don't have anywhere to put them. I was like, we'll figure it out. So he got a trailer. He's so sweet. He's so sweet. He got a trailer. He went, he picked them up, and I purchased dog, like, you know, those dog lines, like the 30 foot wire lines with like a stake screwed in the ground. I put them on that for like months. So I moved it around every day. I took my two sheep and I like moved them around a little bit for a long time. And that's how they lived until we had a pasture. And that was last spring, just for the record. That was last spring, 1 year ago. We have 20 sheep today.
Oh my gosh.
Yes,
that's sheep math. It's like chicken math, but sheep math.
Are your sheep having babies or you just keep buying sheep?
Both. So we had our two sheep. They had babies. I bought two more and a ram to breed them with. And then my mom had three sheep and we just kind of decided to combine forces. Like, we were already doing all the sheep things and she's doing all the cow things. And so I was like, well, we'll just do the sheep. If you can help us build some pasture, we'll do the sheep. So we acquired those three and then we had 12 lambs this year, or whoa, 11 lambs this year. So anyway, they multiplied very fast. Whoa. I don't know what happened, but it got out of control really quick.
Wait, so are you just drowning in sheep milk?
No, not yet. We will be, but we only have two in milk right now. I do not separate the babies for a month because I really want them to get, you know, the full nutrients and make sure they're getting enough and establish that and make sure that the lambs are healthy and a good size. So here in about a week or two, we will have a lot of sheep milk, but they also don't offer as much milk as cows, or even sometimes goats can have a higher supply than sheep. Mm-hmm. So it's not as like four sheep in milk is not nearly as much as if you had like four goats in milk.
What's the taste difference in cow compared to sheep?
I always describe sheep milk as melted ice cream. It's like, it's like cow's milk, but very creamy and a little bit sweeter. It is so good. It is the best milk I've ever had by far. Yeah. And I love cow's milk. Like, I love raw cow's milk, but it is way better.
Can you overnight me some? I don't think there's sheep in Oklahoma. I don't think I've ever seen a sheep in Oklahoma.
Oh man, you've got to have sheep out there. Just
surely. I see lots of goats. Got thousands of goats and thousands of cows, but I don't think I've seen a sheep.
Goats are definitely more popular, but I'm working to change that. I'm working tirelessly on Instagram to change that and make sheep great again.
I went to Scotland a few years ago, and a fun fact I learned is that there's more sheep than people on Scotland or in Scotland. So I was like, wow, that's fascinating. Yeah, but everywhere you drive, there's sheep, and it's fun.
I love sheep. Love our sheep. They're the best.
Can you tell us how'd you turn crunchy? What was your pipeline? Like, you know, have you always been this way, or did you have kids and then you woke up?
Before you got on, we were talking about how sourdough and chickens are like the gateway to the homesteading.
So true. True.
I was telling her about my sister-in-law who started asking me about sourdough. And then before I knew it, I said, be careful. She's got chickens, ducks. So I said, told you, it's a slippery slope. It's really dangerous.
That's the dream.
Okay, so I turned crunchy. I would say the foundation is that I was raised this way for the most part. So what's funny is when I was a kid, me and especially my older sister would make fun of my mom so hard for like buying organic and taking us to the chiropractor, using her essential oils. But she was just like one step in the crunchy door. Well, we both came into adulthood and went like extreme crunchy. And she joked, she's like, you guys are worse than me. You made fun of me your whole childhood. And now you're wow. way worse than me. We go to her house and we're like, Mom, this has seed oils in it. This is moldy coffee. This is like, go down the line. We're like, throw it all away. But I pretty much was raised this way. My mom was, we'll call her scrunchy. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the term that we use. Like mostly crunchy, but not all the way. And I definitely went my own way. Like as I got older, you know, everyone has to kind of experiment and see what they were missing. I came into adulthood having never eaten at Burger King. I'd never had a fruit roll up or a Gusher or a Kellogg cereal or any of those things. So I definitely did my experimenting in my younger years. And then I would say could be way worse. I would say twofold. Having my first baby in 2020, like really amplified the crunchiness. And then I worked for a very holistic chiropractor for 5 years. And I was both his nanny, and I started as his nanny. And then I became their like back office account management financial person. And he was pretty holistic. And so I feel like the combination of those two really sent me. And you know, the crunchy world is interesting because you just keep going, and every step you take, you realize there's more. Like there's more to unpack. There's more swaps to make. There's more. You're like, I didn't know. People on the internet get really mad when I share about something. They're like, I just shared about my favorite mold-free coffee the other day. And they were like, there's mold in coffee? Yeah. I had no idea. And so it just spiraled from there. My oldest is almost 5 now, and I feel like I'm a level of crunchy that I didn't think I would ever get to.
Isn't it crazy how, like, you know, when we first start out, we're learning all these things, but now, like, I know you said you have a presence on social media too. It's like, I almost forget that, like, a lot of people who are following us are like, don't know, you know, a lot. They just like see one video on our page and go follow, but they have like no idea the extent of the crunchy pipeline we're going down, right? Like the mold-free coffee, the don't trust pharma, the, you know, there's just, you know, sunscreen. Like, it just is such a pipeline. And sometimes I forget, like, I should just start talking about like small little facts, because that's where people need to start and like be planted into the, oh, maybe I should start researching this. And I never thought about that. It's crazy to like, sometimes I forget, like, you know, I started at nowhere too. Like, I started not knowing.
It's hard because people get really overwhelmed. You start talking about, I would say, especially in the realm of motherhood, there's so much to learn from pregnancy, prenatal care, delivery, birth, postpartum. How are you going to raise your baby? There's so many decisions in an 18-month span from preconception to their first year of life that it's very overwhelming to people. And I forget that too. You just have to start small. And one little step at a time.
Yeah, it can be scary at first. You're like, I can't leave my house because everything's going to hurt me. But once you're like deep in it, then you're like, okay, we can relax. And like, it's just a lifestyle. It's so easy to just be healthier and make better
choices. Have you seen that? I've seen it a couple times recently. It's a meme or a picture of the cycle of a crunchy mom. And it's like, you start here and you go all the way, you know, down to like, extreme, can't leave my house because there's chemtrails and PUFAs and glyphosate out there, and I have to stay inside, and I can't eat anything, I have to make everything from scratch, and I can't wear shoes, I can't wear sunscreen, I can't wear polyester. And then it's like, you go back to like 80-20, you know, you just have to live a little. It's like the extreme, and then you kind of settle in. I definitely hit that extremism point. And I realized that, and this is actually one thing I preach very big on social media, very big. Some of the most important swaps are A, internal, like all in your head, and B, completely free. People will drop all their money on devices, supplements, and protocols, and they will completely miss the top 10 things that you can and should be doing for your health that are completely free. And that's one thing that I preach big is when people get really overwhelmed, I'm like, stop. You don't need to buy anything else. Get your mind right. Get outside. Get some fresh air. Open your windows. Stare at a sunrise or a sunset. get good sleep, drink good water, like the basics, the fundamentals are free and easy, and then make it a lifestyle and it doesn't have to be overwhelming. So
that's so true. That is so true. That's such a good point. Okay. I want to touch back on, you were raised crunchy, which you don't really come across a lot of people, I feel like, raised crunchy or our age.
It was not trendy when I was growing up. I was heavily made fun of for it.
Yeah. That's so fascinating. But I feel like a lot of people are saying, like, I see a lot of criticism online. Oh, we're going to give our kids eating disorders, or we're going to like make them weird, or they're just going to grow up scared of everything. How are you, like, well, how did you feel growing up? Did you deal with any of that? And then are you changing anything with your children the way you're raising them crunchy?
Yeah. Such a good question. My husband and I talk about this a lot. It's a big topic of conversation. I respectfully disagree that you automatically inherit an eating disorder because your parents fed you healthy, nutritious food. I actually don't think that that is the determining factor. I had a very unhealthy relationship with food from my childhood, and I don't think it was because my mom fed us healthy food. I think it was the way that food was talked about and the way that food was handled. And yes, there's a lot of things that we want to change for our children, and a lot of things that I felt were harmful for me in my childhood. It's hard to talk about because my parents are my biggest fan. They listen to every piece of content that I put out, and I love them dearly. So like talking about all the things that they did wrong is challenging because I don't want them to feel that way. And obviously it's not, you know, here's everything you did wrong. Mm-hmm. Even if I raised my kids in the most perfect way, they would still grow up, become adults, and say, I'd like to do this differently with my kids. Mm-hmm. It's the natural cycle of life. Everybody gets to make that decision. But the biggest thing for me is we always had to finish our food. Mm-hmm. There was no like intuitive, are you full or are you still hungry? And so that's a big thing that I try to change with my kids and just the way we talk about food. So I try to allow them things that I normally wouldn't if we're out and about or at an event, and not make too big of a deal of it, but more so speak on, this is why we eat nutritious food. So my four-year-old already knows we eat protein before we eat sugar. Sugar is not going to kill us, but it is more ideal for our body and our digestive system and his strong muscles, as he says, to eat protein first. So even if it's a bowl of homemade ice cream that I would feed him for breakfast because it's so healthy and nutritious, I still try to relay the message that it's ideal to eat protein first. If we are out and about and everybody's handing out goldfish, I would never in a million years buy a pack of goldfish for my children. But I try not to make too big of a deal of it. And I just explain, these ingredients aren't the best for our bodies. We can eat them, but if we eat them too much, it's going to make us sick and we're not going to feel good. And he gets that. And so I feel that that really helps them understand that there is a balance and we can indulge, but we don't want to indulge too much. And also I help him understand that, you know, sometimes if you limit too much, you can create the binge eating mm-hmm. habit. I had a lot mm-hmm. of those binge eating habits as a kid. It was so limited in some areas that I would sneak and I would mm-hmm. binge eat. And that translated into something that I struggled with as an adult. And again, I don't think the healthy food, as people say, is the problem. I think it's the way that we look at it and the way that we talk to our mm-hmm. kids about it. So we try to find balance. We try to let them live a little. We keep our food very simple and very nutritious in our home. And we try to explain the meaning behind it instead of saying, you have to eat all your dinner. I always tell my kids, you do not have to finish your dinner. However, you do not get to skip your dinner so that you can just eat a yummy snack that you prefer. The protein mm-hmm. is important. If you're full, you are welcome to walk away from your plate. But if you are hungry and you're asking for a snack, that tells me that you need protein first. And so that's always kind of our message that we share with our kids to help, you know, eliminate some of those issues.
That is literally verbatim the exact way I'm raising my son too. And it makes sense when you logically think about it. And like going back to what you said, you know, about your parents, because I'm the same way. Like I would never want my parents to listen to something I say and them feel like, oh, I feel attacked, you know, because it's like, I truly believe everyone as a parent is doing the best of their ability. And like, it's just, you know, your parents probably loved you so much and they knew so much about junk food that they were like, I can't imagine giving it to you. Like, I can't imagine, because I want your body to thrive. And I kind of had that when I first had my son. I remember thinking, like, I will literally never let my son have chips or, you know, goldfish or red 40 and like all the things. But then as he got older, I was like, okay, he's starting to ask for things. Like, I can either one, have a bad relationship with my son and make him have a bad relationship with food, or I can just be more logical and be like, hey, yeah, you can have these things when we're out and about, but what we buy for our groceries at home isn't going to be Doritos. You know what I mean? Like, there's just such a time and place for things. And it annoys the crap out of me when I see people on the internet like, you're giving your kid an eating disorder. Like, okay, do you want me to give them obesity? Like, it's literally our
would
job.
Would you prefer diabetes?
Like, exactly. It's just, it's
I really
insane.
Feel like we were the guinea pig generation.
Oh, for sure.
We were the generation that was kind of on the tipping point. We just talked about this last night at our family dinner in regards to screen time and phones and what we are or are not going to allow with our kids. And we were kind of the guinea pigs, like all of these dyes and GMOs and modified food. We didn't really know the harms of it. And it was kind of new. I mean, a lot of this stuff was allowed and introduced before us, you know, in the 70s and 80s, but it didn't really become common and popular until, you know, 90s, early 2000s, even, along with screens. And, you know, smartphones weren't even a thing until like the early 2000s, like iPhones. Mm-hmm. And social media was not really a thing. I mean, Instagram was just pictures. It was just literally pictures. That's all you could do, was post a picture. And it's all very different now. And so I feel like our generation is really having to crack down on what we allow for our kids, because it's terrifying. It's terrifying. Mm-hmm. How are they going to end up if we do not have rules and regulations and boundaries and guidelines, and they might not follow them 100% when they're adults. That's fine. That's up to them. But I can at least give them the best foundation I can, you know, with the resources I have.
The Anxious Generation, I think, is the book it's called, but it's a really good read. It's about like our generation just growing up on these screens, and now we're big balls of anxiety and depression and all these other things.
We had a message at church this last weekend, and it was literally a graph of your life in months. So from 18 years old to 90 years old. I'm going to butcher this, but I'm going to relay it as best I can. I think it was from a TED Talk, he said, is where he got it and kind of modified it for his message. It was from 18 years old to 90 years old. And it was a graph. It was a square of all of the dots, and each dot equaled a month. And so he filled in, this many months are gone sleeping, this many months are gone working or in school, so job, schooling. This many months are gone in the car, commuting. This many months are gone eating. This many months are gone going to the bathroom. And, you know, half your chart is full. Okay, so you have 50% of your chart full of basic necessities, and then you have everything else. The average child nowadays is on the trajectory to fill the remaining 50% of their block, so half of their months, 93%. Staring at a screen. When he filled out the graph, my jaw hit the floor. It was literally, there was 18 months left of open, available, free time, so to speak, air quotes, from 18 to 90. That is the trajectory that our children are on if we do not do something about it, if we do not, you know, raise them differently and change things and have those boundaries. And it's a big reason why my husband and I have a lot of conversations about what are we going to allow. You know, people say screen time, it's not harmful. You don't even have an adult to study to determine the harms of it that grew up in the way our kids are growing up right now. You can't even say that it's not harmful because we don't even have that information yet. We don't even know how they're going to turn out with unlimited screen time. And it's just crazy.
I was going to say harmfulness, like side effects aside, we only, you know, get a certain amount of childhood. We're going to know our children more as adults than we will as children. And I think they said, like, by the time they're 12, we've spent the most time we're going to spend with them, because then they start doing activities and this and that.
Yeah, that makes me want to cry.
I know, me too. I think about that a lot, though. I'm like, I don't want to just let my child just stare at the screen. Like, that's time we can be spending together and bonding, and like, we're never going to get these moments back. So I think that's also just an important factor to think about when considering screen time. I do think it can be a tool, like maybe at the dentist or something, like it can be a helpful tool, but to just like say, oh, here you go. I mean,
I don't want to offend anybody, and I hope no one is taking this personally, but it feels like lazy parenting to me to just throw them a screen every day and say, here you go. Like, it's just the easier way.
It is so easy to let screens raise your kid. And I don't say that as a shameful thing, because anyone can fall into that trap. And especially if you don't know any better, if you weren't raised, if that's how you were raised and you don't know any better, it takes a lot of work to break that habit of yourself. I think a lot of people, unfortunately, in this generation, they like the idea of kids, but they don't actually like the raising of the kids, because it's hard work. People like the idea of having a baby, and especially when it's, you know, glamified on social media, the pregnancy and the beautiful births and the newborn phase and the baby phase. And it is very sweet and it is such a treasure, but that is a blip of your child's life. I mean, truly the smallest, tiniest little morsel of their life. You have to be committed to raising them to adulthood. And, you know, when people ask, oh, how do I know when I'm done having kids? Should I have any more kids? My answer is always, do you want another baby or do you want another human being? Mm-hmm. Do you want to enjoy that newborn phase again? Are you just missing your babies? Because that's okay, that's acceptable. Or do you want to raise them to adulthood with as challenging as that is, especially in today's day and age? Because there's a difference.
I specifically remember after having my son, I had my son when I was young, unexpectedly, before any of my other friends had kids. I remember having him and being like, holy shit, most people should not have kids. Like, I was watching people, and not even to be judgy, but whatever. I was watching people take the easy route for absolutely everything. And like, it's been normalized. And I'm not saying people don't love their kid just because they do XYZ, but like, it has been so normalized to take the easy route for absolutely everything. Like, I believe personally, when you have a child, you now conform to, you're the parent, like your old life is over. You're done. Like, you now brought this child into the world. It's your duty to raise, flourish. Like, that is where your energy goes. And it's so crazy to watch people think that like their life can stay the same after having a baby.
When they wonder, you can have kids, your life doesn't have to change. Yes, yeah, it does. Like, it absolutely does.
But then they, like, you know, they're miserable. They are so sad. They don't get why it's so hard. And it's like, because you were supposed to lay down your old life. Your old life is dead and you are now in motherhood. And especially like if you believe in God, like that you are laying your life down for your child. Like, you are now raising a child to be a follower of Christ, essentially. And it's like, breastfeeding is hard. You have to like stick it out. Getting little to no sleep at night is so hard, but like, we're told, like, just do cry it out, just put them in their crib, don't go back in until the morning, they're fine. Like, that is not biologically how we are supposed to operate, and we are seeing it now, the effects on, you know, kids who, and again, not to make people feel shamed, but it's like, we have been so told, especially by social media can be such a good tool, but social media has become our scapegoat for taking the easy route and normalizing the easy route. I can't get over how many times I see people innocently trying to help moms by saying, just give them formula. Like, oh, they can't latch, their tummy hurts, just give them formula. And I think there could be a time and place for sure to look at other options. I'm not saying if you use formula, it's bad.
I think it's the lack of ownership that is the root of the problem, especially with, and again, no shame, no judgment, the fed is best, or the just do cry it out, or the just put them in front of a screen. All of these topics, the problem is the lack of A, information and education, and B, the lack of ownership, because fed is not best. There are legitimate studied benefits to breast milk. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's still okay in certain circumstances. There are lots of circumstances where I have recommended formula. Mm-hmm. I had a sister-in-law who did not get milk. Her milk never came in for some reasons, unbeknownst to her. She didn't get milk. The next option is donor milk, which she did some of that. But for the remainder of that supplemental feed, it was, okay, what's the best formula out there? Let's do that. It's okay to choose these things for your kids, but you need to have, I think it's important to have the information on both sides and say, I am choosing this. Here's why.
Yeah.
And people get really mad when you talk about it because they feel like you're shaming them. And it's not shame. It's just look at the information and make a choice. And then be really rooted in your choice. You need to know why you're choosing something. If you don't know why you're choosing something and you're not convicted in it, you're going to feel shamed every time anyone says anything about it, and we talk about this a lot in our family, we don't feel shamed when, for example, we keep the Sabbath. That's really weird. Okay. No, not a lot of people do that today.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel shamed when people talk about why they go to church on Sunday. I feel very rooted in my decision. That's not a motherhood topic, but it's just it's a topic that we discuss a lot on our social media, especially if you're rooted in that decision, there is no shame. I have decided to have my babies at home, but there are medical reasons that would lead me to decide to have a hospital birth and medical intervention. Neither of those do I feel any shame about because I know why I'm making the decision. And I feel like a lot of moms do not know why they're making the decisions that they're making. And so they feel attacked automatically because they feel like they're in defense mode because they don't know why. Well, this is just what I was told to do, or this is just what I saw on the internet. And so if you don't have a reason for why you're doing these things, it can feel, you know, easily shamed.
So when I was pregnant with my son, I was not crunchy yet. And I was just told, like, everyone around me was like, just formula feed. And I was like, okay. Like, I literally planned to formula feed because I didn't know that there was on a cellular level, there is a difference between breast milk and formula, and the benefits of breast milk just absolutely outweigh formula. And I feel like I can talk about formula and the way I talk about it, because I genuinely was just going to use formula because I didn't know better. And it's like, once I had my son, I just felt this like mom instinct to breastfeed. And it's like, thank God I did. And I listened to my gut over like everyone else telling me, even when I would get mastitis, like people in my family who like loved me were just like, just give up and do formula. Like, it's okay. But it's like, I just had this gut feeling of like, I feel like I have to, like, I want to stick it out. Like, I know the benefits, like I have to stick it out. And I think maybe sometimes we're trying to make moms' lives too easy instead of just letting them embrace the hard. And I think especially now in today's culture, most moms are working outside the home. It's nearly impossible to go to work, drop your kid off at daycare, pump at work if you're even allowed to do it. Like, it's really hard to be a mom these days. And I think a lot of, like, same with sleep, go to work sleep deprived or sleep train your kid for a couple nights and, you know, get your good night's sleep. It's like, we have set moms up for failure, and I don't necessarily, it's not the mom's fault. So if you're listening to this feeling mom shamed, I swear I'm not trying to mom shame you. It's just,
no, not
we
at all.
Have set moms up for failure from the beginning. And it's the same, it goes back to pregnancy. Nobody told anyone to research, you know, the vaccines, breastfeeding, safe co-sleeping. Like, we
epidurals,
have just
set, yes, medical intervention, nothing.
Yes. We have literally set moms up for failure, and it's not the mom's fault. It's society's fault for just teaching moms that do this, it's the easiest way. Or, oh, you have postpartum depression, like, you know, formula feed, get your baby to sleep in its own room. Like,
take
it's just
pills.
Yes. Yeah. It's just we have set moms up for failure.
We've become so disconnected from our intuition as not only mothers, but women in general. And like, we're just so reliant on, oh, our doctor told us this. My app told me to do this. My mother-in-law, even like, I do think it's important to listen to women that have done it before, but we've been so locked into this way of living, this culture now.
But there's
that it's
a difference between listening to women who have done it before, who did things because someone told them to.
Exactly.
And then listening to women who did things because they researched it.
Yeah.
There is a difference
exactly.
between those two. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a sad topic. And the breastfed thing, the fed is best, drives me nuts because fed is the bare minimum, right? Of course we're going to feed our babies. Of course we're going to feed them.
Yes. And I now have gotten to a point in motherhood where I used to get really heated on these topics, and I would get in arguments with people about them. And I've now come to a place where I realized every single mother is doing the best that they can with the resources and the information that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at everything from that fundamental stance, then you realize we have the same goal, but we have different information and we have different resources. And I was raised this way. So I was raised very unconventionally. I was homeschooled. I have 9 siblings. My mom had me at home way before home birth was like cool and trendy. She fed us organic food. I've never seen a pediatrician in my whole life. I was an adult the first time I stepped foot into a hospital or got an ear infection or, you know, any of these things. And so I was raised in a way that taught me to think outside the box from the beginning and to find the answers myself. Most people are not that way. And so you're right. It's not their fault. Society has failed women and mothers and families in general. And this is another area where it's hard for me to discuss it without discussing our faith, because that is obviously such a pivotal foundation of how we view these topics. But if you have faith, if you believe in God and you read the Bible and you understand the basics of it, then you understand that we live in a fallen world. Mm-hmm. And the Bible is crystal clear that Satan, for now, temporarily, is the God of this world. It calls him the prince of the power of the air. And so if you don't think that as the God of this world and the prince of the power of the air, he's not going to infiltrate the most fundamental structure of our world, and that is the family unit, the marital unit, the parent-child unit, the family dynamic, that's the first thing that he's going to go after. If you want to tear down a society, the first thing you should do is go after their family structure and infiltrate that structure, because that's going to be the quickest way to deteriorate your society. And people don't see it that way. They don't see it as a problem. And I agree with you, what you said, people want to make moms' lives a little too easy. Now, I also don't believe that you should be a martyr and make your life unnecessarily hard. Yeah. But it's not easy.
We don't have to want to die, but
right. Raising kids is not easy. And God didn't intend it to be easy, I don't believe. Like you said, you lay down your life when you have children. You had your opportunity to be a child. When you face situations and determine if you're going to react like a child or like an adult, you had your chance to be a child. It's done. It's over. You're an adult. Now is your chance to behave like an adult. And sometimes that's hard, because some of us were taught by our parents who still behaved like children. And so that's all you know. And so it's really hard to step into the role of, okay, now how do I behave like an adult? How do I research? How do I gather this information? How do I make an informed decision? How do I have respectful conversations with differing opinions on these big topics without it getting heated? It's so sad how society has failed women and families in general.
You said, motherhood or raising children isn't easy, but it doesn't have to be as difficult as we're making it. It can be a lot easier when you kind of block out all the other noise and just listen to yourself. You don't need all of these.
And your intuition.
Other...
Yes. Society has rid mothers of their intuition. They don't have it. When their kid has a problem, or my son, he's been crying and he pulled at his ear, should I take him to the hospital? They don't even know how to investigate and how to... There are things that you can do at home, and you can get them adjusted, and you can, look for swelling in their ear. You can use some garlic and some, there's so many things you can do at home before you take that step. But when your intuition is gone, when society has stripped you of your intuition, you feel helpless, and it's terrifying. And I feel so sad for a lot of the new mothers coming into motherhood in today's society with that stance.
Yeah. And society has villainized, putting the garlic in the ear and, oh, that's woo-woo. That's not okay. Mm-hmm. Just you're torturing your, it's, what are they saying? It's abuse if you don't take them to the doctor. Like, it's of course we're not going to, they're going to call CPS if I decline this and this and this. Yeah, of course we're not going to do it. It's scary, but you got to put your foot down and listen to yourself.
I know a lot of moms just in our circle who jump through a lot of the hoops just to have a paper trail. Air quotes, as they call it, because it is very villainized to not follow the regimen and the certain steps that they want you to follow, especially if you have your baby in a hospital. There's a lot more requirements if that's your start. Like, I don't even think you can leave the hospital without having a pediatrician appointment.
An AMA or something. Yeah.
Yes. And then you go to the pediatrician, and there are no exceptions. There's no information on vaccinating. There's no delayed schedule. There's no education. It's just, these are safe and effective, and you have to do it. You don't have it. A lot of parents don't even know that they have a choice. And sometimes they don't. There are lots of pediatricians who will not see you if you do not follow their schedule because it's a huge part of their pay. It is the number one way that they make their income as big pharma. And so if you do not follow the steps, you may not be seen there. because you are a useless patient that does not make them any money. And also, they were not educated on these topics either. They were indoctrinated, not educated. Mm-hmm. And I oftentimes don't even care which side people fall on, so long as they fall on that side, because they had the information presented to them and they were able to make a decision mm-hmm. based on that. Everything has a pro and a con, right? Like everything mm-hmm. has a risk reward scale. And that's the conversation I never hear about a lot of these topics from, you know, medical interventions, pregnancy, epidurals, delivery, or C-sections, or vaccinations, or any of these things, circumcision, or the big, heavy topics. Sorry, we're really getting into it. Your audience might be like, what's going on here?
But I'm used to it.
Yeah, okay, good. Let's do it. A lot of the things that frustrate me about these topics is the conversation is not the risk and reward scale. It's, is this good or is this bad? And it's not that simple. It's not that simple about any one of those topics. There is a risk and a reward for every single medical intervention in your life, in your child's life. There's a time and a place and a risk and a reward. Even when you want to talk about vaccinations, there is a risk, there is a reward on either side of the coin that you fall on. And people are just discussing, was it good or is it bad? Is it right or is it wrong? It's not that black and white. It's really not that simple.
I have a question for you, and you don't have to answer it if you don't want to, or we can cut this whole thing out. Are you unvaccinated? Like, were you vaccinated as a kid?
I'm completely unvaccinated. My entire family.
Okay, Slay Queen. No polio or anything for you?
Yeah, no measles for you?
When I was 10 weeks pregnant with my first, I was 21. I was 10 weeks pregnant. I went to the doctor and they said they had to do blood work. And I cried like a baby. I called my husband. I said, come pick me up. She was like, what's the problem? I was like, I've never been poked with a needle. And she was like, how are you 21 and you've never been poked with a needle? I was like, I've never even seen a needle that close to my body.
Oh my God.
I had a full mental breakdown, like a panic, because yes, I'm completely unvaccinated. My entire family is, I mean, I have close to 20 nieces and nephews, all my siblings. It's just, we come from a long line of...
That's amazing.
Your husband hit the jackpot.
such
your
goals.
Kids did too. Yeah, literally your kids hit the jackpot of having a mom that's unvaccinated. Oh my gosh.
When my husband and I were dating, one of the first questions I asked him was, I will not vaccinate my children. And I need to know right now if that's going to be an issue or not, because I'm not budging. And he was like, whoa, okay, I haven't got that far. I haven't even thought that far yet, but I guess we're going to talk about it. So
I love it.
So he supports you?
Yeah.
What was that?
He supports you?
He does. It was obviously not on his radar. People ask me this too about home birth. They're like, how did you convince your husband to have a home birth? I'm like, convince? I'm giving birth. I decide where I give birth. That's what I said.
So then I say to you.
He was raised very conventional. His parents just, you know, followed the system. They didn't know any better. They didn't have anyone in their life to tell them to think outside the box. I love his parents deeply. And so I don't say that as like a shameful thing. They just, that's how they were raised. That's how they raised their kids. That's often what you see in today's society. And so he was, you know, C-section, formula fed, vaccinated, all the, you know, conventional things. And so it was definitely not on his radar, but he was very open to it, and he had kind of already made steps. He was 27 when we got married, and so he'd been a bachelor for a while, and he had kind of already been making steps to like eat healthy food. Like instead of eating out every day, he would like meal prep it was just chicken and rice. He ate chicken and rice every day for every meal. It's a typical bachelor meal, but he was making steps to make healthier decisions. So I think he was really open to it. I was also a lot less crunchy when we started dating, and we've kind of shifted together. So I feel like that helps. I was very young when we started dating. And so we've kind of come into that together. And as far as some of those bigger decisions like vaccines and home birth, he was very open to it, even though it wasn't on his radar. I think he trusted my research, my intuition. I'm kind of more of a researcher than him. So the conversation was very, you are not allowed to shoot this down until we've both done our research, and then we can present it to each other. He never had any research. So he was like, I don't have an argument because I'm not going to research the best place to give birth. That's your thing. And so you do your thing and I'll support you. And same thing with vaccines. He didn't have any research to support his stance, and I had a lot. And the only thing that we really heavily disagreed on was circumcision, I would say. That was the biggest thing that I lost out. I lost that one. Both of our boys are circumcised. And it was not until our third pregnancy that he agreed we would not do it again. But it was probably our biggest disagreement in that category.
That's amazing. We love an open-minded man. It just literally makes all the difference. And if you're single and listening to this and you're wanting to be crunchy or you're wanting to make a healthier lifestyle, it's so important to be asking these questions early on. I did the same thing. I asked Joey, like one of the first times we talked, what are your thoughts on God? Are you vaccinated? Did you get the COVID vaccine? And like, would you vaccinate your kids when they're born? And like, if we weren't aligned, then like, goodbye. It was just, that was such a non-negotiable for me. And I think so many people get into this thing of like, my partner doesn't agree with me. They're making me vaccinate. They're making me XYZ. And it's like, we should be having these hard conversations like as soon as possible. And I get, you know, if you're married and then you start to become more crunchy and like your partner hasn't followed along, I get that. But it's so important to be aligned with someone that you are potentially about to date, to marry.
Yeah. My husband and I met through church. So faith was, that was obviously like a foundational thing that was already established. And because our faith and religion is very unconventional, it was important to me to find someone in that faith, because those are, I mean, we don't keep Christmas, we don't keep Easter, we keep the biblical holy days, we go to church on Saturdays, we keep the Feast of Tabernacles, we don't eat pork. I mean, these are huge, huge things. I don't know how I could have raised a family with those differing opinions. So that was important to me. But beyond that, there's a lot of nuances and there's a lot of big topics, like you're saying, that should be discussed ahead of time. And we did. We hit them all. How many kids do you want? How do you feel about this? How do you feel about vaccines? How do you feel about all of these different things? Homeschooling or public school or private school? Or there's a lot of different topics to cover. And I think that people don't have a lot of those hard conversations up front. There are nuances, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. Sometimes these things come about way later. And, you know, that's a case by case situation. But for the most part, yes, if you are single, they are out there, but you have to vet them. Like, you have to ask the hard questions up front. And these unicorn, I always tell Ryan, he's a unicorn. Like, you are the unicorn of all unicorns when it comes to men. And I hit the lottery. Have you ever heard that joke? My brother used to tell it all the time. It's the stepped on a duck joke. It's the one of those blonde brunette redheads. They all die and go to this place where there's these ducks, and the deal is, I can't believe I'm talking about this right now. The deal is, you can't step on a duck. If you step on a duck, you get paired with like the worst mate, basically. So everybody steps on a duck and they get the worst mate and whatever. And the blonde gets to the very end and she gets the unicorn, like the best of all. And she's like, how did this happen? And the dude goes, I don't know. I stepped on a duck, man. That's the joke. Anyway, I always joke that I won the game and he stepped on a duck. Like, he is my unicorn. Aww. And I'm a little crazy, but it's okay because we balance each other out.
I beautiful. Love that. Jordan, do you have any other questions?
Otherwise, I have one, but you can, if you have one, you can go first.
No, go. You go.
Okay. I was just going to say, maybe to end on a lighter note, maybe you could give three or a couple or whatever you think, the recommendation to start a homestead. Like, if someone wanted to start, what's your advice? Any tools or like just mindsets or what should someone do first?
I love this question. We talk about it a lot as kind of more beginner homesteaders. And my number one recommendation is start. Do it. Do it scared. Do it unprepared. Do it in whatever manner you have the ability to do it right now. Do it exactly where you are. A lot of people think you need a giant 50-acre farm and 100 animals and all of these various things to be a quote-unquote homesteader. And I would say that's actually the worst way to start. I actually would not recommend buying 50 acres and 100 animals and starting there. Start now. Go to your kitchen and make a meal from scratch. When we lived in a neighborhood, we had 6 chickens in our backyard. We got a free chicken coop on Facebook Marketplace and 6 chickens. And I bought some little planter boxes. I put them on our deck, just little movable fabric bags, filled them with dirt, and I grew things. And I would use other people's produce that they had in abundance. And I learned how to can tomatoes and jellies. and just start. You can start anywhere. My second recommendation would be find what you're passionate about, because that's always going to win. You cannot force yourself into a box. If you do not like, you know, this is silly, but it goes back to like the sheep and goat conversation. Just go with what you're passionate about. If you are passionate about growing food and preserving food, do that. If you're passionate about animals, do that in whatever way you can. If you're passionate about more kitchen things, you know, cooking from scratch or preserving food or whatever, do that. Just find what you're passionate about and do that. And then lastly, I would say you're going to have to find a way to monetize. Homesteading as a hobby is very expensive. And that doesn't mean you have to turn to social media or build a big business or open a big store or whatever. It can be very simple. We're actually planning next summer to do a very small farm stand. A lot of people are doing those now. They're becoming very popular. Find a major road, buy an old hutch or a little shed or something affordable. Make it cute with flowers and whatever and sell your products, or find a way to host local workshops or go into your local Crunchy Moms group and do homeschool days. If you do have land, you can do field trip days, or, you know, you can start a blog, start writing about your garden tips. There's so many things you can do without putting your face on social media. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that is an outlet that people can use, but there are ways that you can monetize as you build, because it's nearly impossible to just build a large homestead from the ground up in today's day and age, when most millennials and Gen Zs can't even afford to buy a house, mm-hmm. you know, nonetheless, land and animals. So that's why I say start where you are and find your passion, and then find a way to make money doing what you love.
I love that. Can you tell everyone where they can find you?
Yeah. So we're pretty much everywhere at this point. We're working on getting more places. We are Acres and Aprons. Our hub is kind of Instagram. We spend the most time on Instagram. But we do cross posts to TikTok, Facebook. We have a website at acresandaprons.com where we have blogs and recipes. We have a handful of things on YouTube, but not many. We have a ton of stuff on Pinterest at Acres and Aprons. So we're really expanding over this last year to all the platforms.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We are so excited to talk with you.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
That's it for today's episode of Moms Unbothered. If this conversation made you think differently, question the norm, or even just feel a little more empowered in your health journey, do us a favor. Share this with another mom who needs to hear it.
If you're loving the show, the best way to support us is by leaving a quick review, subscribing, and connecting with us on social media. It helps us reach more moms who are ready to take back control of what goes on, in, and around their families. We'll be back next week with another conversation, but until then, trust your instincts, question to everything, and stay unbothered.